This is DW News live from Berlin. Russia-backed separatists say they've taken a key town in eastern Ukraine. Moscow steps up its bombardment of Donbass, aiming to encircle defensive forces and take control of the country's industrial heartland. Also on the program, G7 industrial nations set out ambitious climate change goals. Energy ministers meeting here in Berlin aim to stop using coal to generate electricity by 2035. I'm Phil Gale. Welcome to the program. Ukraine's warning that Russia is closer to surrounding its troops in the eastern Donbass region. The advance could be a turning point in Russia's drive to gain complete control of Donbass. Pro-Russia separatists say they've taken the strategic railway hub town of Lyman. Russian forces are also advancing from three directions on the nearby twin cities of Severodonetsk and Lysychansk. Ukrainian-controlled cities in the Luhansk region have come under relentless bombardment.
Seeking safety underground. For those still in Severodonetsk, basements like this are their best hope of escaping the relentless Russian shelling. They try their best to go on as normal, but the mood here is desperate.
I must survive. I don't think about those shellings, bombings, explosions, and so on and so forth. I just have to, or even must survive.
Ukraine says 90% of the housing in the city has already been damaged by shelling. Russia says its artillery has been pounding Ukrainian military targets as part of its effort to wrest control of the last part of the Luhansk region in Ukrainian hands. Moscow is also trying to cut off supplies to the Ukrainian defenders, striking this warehouse in the eastern town of Bakhmut, where a critical supply route to the besieged cities begins. But while Russian forces may be making advances, Ukraine's determined resistance goes on. The Ukrainian military released this footage. It said shows a strike on a Russian position in a village just outside Severodonetsk. Another sign that for Moscow, its offensive is likely coming at a heavy cost.
Well, our correspondent Rebecca Ritters is in Kyiv. She told me why Ukraine appears to be struggling.
Well, it really comes down to weapons, Phil. I mean, Ukraine still has really high morale. It'll, of course, be interesting to see how that is maintained, you know, if Russia does keep advancing. But at the moment, you know, there is still a lot of positivity and good morale amongst troops. There's a lot of people who are willing to fight, but they're really struggling on the weapons front. They're really outnumbered. You know, we're hearing reports of for every Ukrainian missile that's fired or artillery fire, they're getting 10 to 20 in return. They're really outnumbered by heavy weaponry, which is why President Zelensky has been calling for support from the international community since the beginning of this war. And those calls are getting louder now. I mean, they have received a lot of weapons, but they keep saying they need more, and they certainly need everything that has been pledged to actually arrive in the country and arrive at the front line so that they can attempt to hold back the Russians and, in fact, push them back. But at the moment, they're not being able to do so because they're just being outnumbered when it comes to weapons.
And separatists who have been there since 2014 now appear to have joined in the fight.
Yes, that's right. It does appear that they are the ones that took that town of Lyman. They are militia groups that fight for the Russian-backed forces in the DNR, the Donetsk People's Republic, and the Luhansk People's Republic, and they are joining in the fight as well. But on the other side, the Ukrainian side, you have also, a lot of people volunteering to fight. But as I said before, it's really the weapons that Ukraine needs if they're going to be able to hold back these forces.
And you talked about the Ukrainian morale. President Zelensky's nightly address has struck a more sort of downbeat and ominous tone on Wednesday. How are Ukrainians reacting to his message that things are not going so well there?
I mean, obviously, people are taking it quite badly, they're quite worried. Everyone, you know, that you talk to and ask is really worried, although they say that we have to win. We just have to win. To think of the alternative just isn't worth thinking about. They're trying to remain positive, but things aren't looking good. This is a really decisive moment in this war, and people are extremely worried. What's next? They say, you know, if you give an inch, Russia will take a mile. That seems to be the opinion of most people here. So they're really concerned that if they do manage to take Donbass, that they will continue, obviously, as they've promised, to head further in the southern regions, those port cities of Odessa, Mykolaiv. And, of course, it has everyone here incredibly concerned, even in Kyiv, which is, of course, relatively calm and almost kind of back to life as normal in certain respects, but they are incredibly worried about what's happening in the east of the country.
And so people left there in Donbass must be living in some terrible conditions.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nothing short of dire down there, Phil. These people have already been living without utilities, without electricity, without running water already for weeks now. They've been living under almost continuous shelling, and that is just getting worse. It's intensifying. These people are now running out of food, medicines. They're living largely underground in shelters, in bunkers, with only, you know, moments of daylight in moments of calm. We're hearing about most cities in the region, you know, really only having half an hour between shellings. So terrifying circumstances. The people that haven't been able to flee are either people that chose not to or people that just simply couldn't because they're elderly or disabled. So, you know, imagine how they must be feeling. It must be a terrifying situation for those people down there. And it looks like it's not going to get better anytime soon.
Thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Rittus in Kyiv. Well, satellite images have become one of the key sources of information as this war unfolds. Photos and videos taken from space document events on the ground and can provide vital evidence of atrocities.
Images like this one, showing the destruction of Mariupol, are providing crucial insights into Russia's war in Ukraine. Satellite technology has become a game-changing tool in documenting atrocities. This is Mariupol before the Russian invasion there. This is how the city looked afterwards. Mariupol's theatre, where hundreds of civilians were sheltering before a devastating airstrike. The word children is written on the ground on either side of it. As this next image shows, that did nothing to deter the attackers. These are just some examples of how satellite imagery, often captured by commercial companies, is helping investigators pinpoint what's happening on the ground. When Russian troops withdrew from the city of Bucha near Kyiv, Ukrainian forces discovered streets lined with the bodies of civilians. Russia claimed these scenes were staged by Ukraine after its troops had gone. But a satellite image showed what appeared to be bodies lying in the street nearly 2 weeks before the Russians left the town. It showed how these pictures can also provide evidence of potential war crimes.
We have conclusive evidence, satellite images, and we can conduct a full and transparent investigation. That is what we're interested in, maximum access for journalists, maximum cooperation with international institutions, involvement of the International Criminal Court, complete truth and full accountability.
Commercial satellites mean pictures like these, showing what appears to be mass graves, are now widely available. It's changing the way war crimes are investigated and could prove vital in Ukraine's efforts to hold perpetrators to justice.
Here's a quick roundup of some other stories making news around the world. An investigator in charge of the school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, has said that police made the wrong decision not to immediately enter the classroom after arriving. Police say the incident was mistakenly treated as a barricade rather than an active shooter situation, despite multiple calls from the school to emergency services. China and Russia have vetoed a UN resolution put forward by the United States against North Korea. The US wants to impose more sanctions on Pyongyang because of its renewed ballistic missile launches. It's the first time the UN Security Council has been split since sanctions against North Korea began in 2006. Finland has confirmed its first case of monkeypox. Global health officials have sounded warnings over the rising number of infections in Europe and North America, where the virus is largely considered not to be endemic. Monkeypox had previously only been found in people with links to West and Central Africa. Climate change talks here in Berlin have ended with a commitment by the group of seven leading industrial nations to largely end the use of fossil fuels to generate electricity by 2035. The group also pledged to increase their climate change ambitions and double financial aid for poorer nations by 2025.
No more coal energy by 2035 in their power sectors. That's what the G7 nations agreed on Friday in a bid to slash their greenhouse gas emissions. The agreement comes as two pressing issues, tackling climate change and regaining energy independence for Europe, were high on the meeting's agenda.
The replacement of fossil energies from Russia has very much shaped the political debate and the government's actions in recent days, weeks, and months. But we have to be clear that the challenge of our political generation, namely to curb global warming, will not go away if we focus only on the present. This conference has made that very, very clear.
For the first time, the G7 recognized the need to provide developing countries with additional financial aid to cope with losses and damage caused by global warming. In light of the war in Ukraine, new bilateral partnerships have also been discussed.
The dependence on Russian oil and gas that Europe is feeling right now clearly is an energy security issue. It is also a climate issue as we have to move away from the combustion of hydrocarbon resources. And so the way in which for Europe to enhance its domestic energy security is to produce much more of its energy resources domestically through the deployment of renewables, and to look to source clean sources of energy like hydrogen from stable democratic countries like Canada.
The agreements, which will be put to leaders at the G7 summit in Elmau, Germany next month, were largely welcomed by climate campaigners.
DW Politics correspondent Julia Saudelli was monitoring those talks. I asked her about the impact of the war in Ukraine on the summit.
It was definitely one of the top topics discussed here at the summit, and a lot of the ministers who spoke at press conferences and at events made clear that Russia's invasion of Ukraine and its consequences have put the focus on the connection between security, energy sourcing, and climate change, and it has made it even more relevant for countries within the G7, for example, Germany or Italy, to become quickly independent from Russian fossil fuels. Now, the challenge there is to make sure that this move away from Russian energy sources doesn't bring G7 countries to rely more heavily on fossil fuels from other countries and other sources in the long term, but that this move away from these Russian fossil fuels actually leads to a transformation towards a bigger use of renewable energy.
Julia Saudelli. In football, there are still more than 24 hours to go until the Champions League final kicks off in Paris, but there's already a buzz on the streets of the French capital as Liverpool and Real Madrid supporters soak up the atmosphere. The last times the teams met in a final was in 2018 when Real came out on top. English and Spanish fans were bullish about their team's chances this year, but seemed to be enjoying each other's company despite the rivalry.
This morning, I met a Liverpool fan who told me he had driven from London and had just arrived. What we are experiencing is amazing. I think the fans of the two teams are friendly. There is no bad feeling or fights. So I hope everything will be fine and that we all enjoy the final.
I feel good being here because it's a good atmosphere. We're going to light this place up and I'm very confident that we're going to beat Real Madrid.
This match is a final. And it's a difficult match. Liverpool have a great team, but we are confident because Madrid always win finals. They win them all.
He's confident. This is DW News, live from Berlin. Coming up next in News Asia, Michelle Bachelet's controversial visit to China. The United States describes the trip by the UN human rights chief as a mistake. We'll talk about why. And a Chinese blogger has a first-hand take on wartime in Ukraine, but his upload put him at odds with Beijing. Birish Banerjee will have those stories and more in just a moment, and I'll be back at the top of the hour. Have a good day.